You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported podcast network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. This year, we're celebrating 10 years of food radio. For the past decade, we've been taking you behind the scenes of farms, restaurants, breweries, school cafeterias, and more. It's been 10 years, and we're just getting started. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Paris Gourmet, delivering specialty foods and ingredients right to your restaurant, bakery, and bar. Learn more at parisgourmet.com.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and we're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. This is the 212th episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is the editor-in-chief of a major food and wine publication, and I will introduce him fully in a moment. First, as I do on every show, I will start out with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to acknowledge good. Notice and give praise to people who you think deserve it, whether it's your employees, your employer, your peers or your colleagues, or even your family members. Taking a little time to congratulate someone for their notable work and achievements will not only make them feel great, but it will give you a feel-good moment too. So give credit where credit is due. That's my tip today. Now I'm thrilled to have my guest here with me in the studio. It is Hunter Lewis. He is the editor-in-chief of Food & Wine magazine. Previously, Hunter was the editor-in-chief of Cooking Light, executive editor of Southern Living, food editor of Bon Appetit, and kitchen director of Saveur. He cooked under Jonathan Waxman in Sonoma County, California, and at Barbuto in New York City. A graduate of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, he was also a reporter at the Herald Sun in Durham, North Carolina, and you can find him in his home kitchen in Birmingham, Alabama.
That's right. Thanks for having me, Sherry.
Thanks for coming here. It's really a treat to have you out here in Brooklyn.
It's good to be back. It's been a few years, and I really like what you said about acknowledging good. You know, I think that's an important thing. It's an important rule to live by.
Yeah, thanks. I met you at the Philly Chefs Conference, and there was a little good egg, I think, thing happening.
So the good egg is absolutely about acknowledging good. Our work culture at Food & Wine is called the Good Egg Culture. And every Monday morning at 9 a.m., we acknowledge members of our team who've done the best work the week before, whether they, you know, created a video that went viral or won an award or published a story that was, you know, absolutely killer. And we have this foam squishy egg that says the Good Egg on it. And we toss that to the person who won it for the week, you know. And it's a cheesy ritual, but it's a ritual all the same. And it reinforces every Monday morning, you know, why we do what we do and how we go about it. And that team culture matters more than individual culture, you know. And it's exactly what you said. It's acknowledging good and reinforcing day in and day out who we are and why we work together.
Yeah. Well, I always get inspired from my guess and what they do for my tips, and I that was the inspiration behind my tip, because I was there, and that day the good egg went to Maria Yagoda.
That's right. Maria is our digital restaurant editor, and she is absolutely a good egg.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, great. It's a good start of the show, and you're definitely, I think, a good egg. I want to give you acknowledgement.
All right, thanks.
I can't believe your resume, and even the brief version I gave, you have held a lot of amazing positions at different magazines. So let's go back to your background a bit. And did you study journalism? And when did you know you wanted to get into food?
I studied journalism at UNC, and that was really, for me, it was about telling stories and the fact that I was really crappy at pretty much everything else. You know, bad at math, bad at science, bored by other topics. And journalism was cool to me because it was like going to vocational school. You know, it was like building an engine, you know, learning how to craft a story and what the hierarchy of the story is. And, you know, before you can add any kind of voice or flourish that you learn later, you know, it was really about the sort of bare bones of telling stories. And so that was my foundation at UNC. And then when I went out after being a ski bum for a year, I was working in kitchens, and I came back to North Carolina and got a job as a prep cook during the day. And the weekends I was covering sports. And that was a really, really cool time in my life. I think I was 22, 23. And I got to cook during the week and I got to write about sports during the weekend. And then I parlayed that into a weekend cops beat at the Herald Sun. And so that was my entree into you know, working for a mid-sized daily, and that became a full-time gig. And so, you know, in one way or another, from the time I was 18 and working in my first kitchen job at Jersey Mike's, you know, making sub sandwiches, a lot of number sevens and eights, to the point at which I was a ski bum, or, you know, even after that, you know, in one way or another, I was cooking professionally. You know, they weren't super high level kitchens or jobs. You know, I was a prep cook, I was a fry cook, I was a grill cook. I loved doing it because being in restaurant kitchens was very much like being on the ball field, you know. And I was a lacrosse player at Carolina. And that was a big, big, important part of my life. And I missed that camaraderie and the adrenaline and the teamwork. And cooking really fed that. You know, but I never thought about food as, you know, as a quote-unquote real job. You know, the newspaper reporting was the real job. But I started gravitating towards more lifestyle stories and restaurant criticism, and I had no idea what I was writing. You know, I was BSing my way through these critiques of restaurants, and a buddy said, you know, you like this, you should go to culinary school and get a background in it and then become a critic. So I quit my job after a few years and moved up here. And
what year was this?
That was 2004.
Okay.
I moved to New York City right during the Republican convention, because I remember all the cops on the train.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, after some odd jobs, by spring of 2005, I found my way in Jonathan Waxman's kitchen.
And did you go to culinary school here?
No. Barbudo, okay. Barbudo became my
culinary school. That was your culinary school. Yeah.
You know, and I thought I was going to work there for a year and then go and work my way up and become the critic at the New York Times. I thought I was going to be, you know, the next Reichel or Bruni or Sifton. And within 2 days at Barbudo, I remember the moment I was peeling peppers for this roast chili salsa that was going to be served with grilled skirt steak. And I looked around and I was looking at the dishwashers and, you know, watching the people bringing this fresh produce in and talking to the chefs and the front of the house. They were sitting down for family meal. And I remember looking around and I had this aha moment. I said, you know, I don't want to be a critic. I don't want to have any bearing on these people's livelihoods, bad or good. I don't want to make or break a restaurant because there's too much that goes on behind the scenes and there's too many livelihoods at stake to do that. I just didn't have the constitution for it. And, you know, soon after that, I started falling in love with the cooking and the process and the restaurant family and that life, and did it for several years there here in New York City at Barbudo, and you know, that became my restaurant family, and then also for Waxman out in a little hippie town called Sebastopol in Sonoma County. And I had this moment, you know, that I really, really thought strongly about working my way up and becoming a chef and restaurateur. You know, and then I got married and it made more sense to go into media, you know, because I could come home at night and, you know, not keep the crazy hours. But, you know, I think at some point in my life, I call it my break-even retirement plan. I don't have to worry about putting the kids through school. You know, I will own some kind of restaurant someday.
Okay. Yeah. Well, still have, I don't know, the dream of doing that.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know if it's going to be a Graydon Carter type situation, but, you know, it'll be a fun old man's spot.
Yeah. And well, I know, and people are sad in the industry and beyond about Barbudo that it's going to be closing. It's definitely an industry favorite.
Yeah. You know, I had my moment, 2 weeks ago. I went by to, say hey to Jonathan and the team, and you know, you could tell that it was cathartic for them. This impending you know, move for them, been hanging over their heads for so long. I think it was good to go and get the news out there that, you know, that the landlord was going to turn it in. I think it's gonna be like a three condo unit, which is just crazy. It's mind-boggling. Yeah,
I know. I went back for lunch last week too. Yeah. Had to go,
and we slammed in a really cool thing on Monday. We had everybody from Missy Robbins to Marcus Samuelson, Coleman Andrews, Dorothy Kalins, Helen Rosner, a bunch of fun chefs and writers and editors, and did a sort of a state of things there on Monday. You know, and that'll be in the we'll edit it down and put it in the July restaurant issue, because to me, if you think about a place like Barbudo, you think about a place like the Red Cat. You know, we're at a real moment right now in New York City, and at a real moment when everybody's talking about the cost of rent and the cost of labor, and, you know, with Hudson Yards, you know, seeming to pop up out of thin air.
a whole city within a city.
Yeah, you know, and with some things that were discussed on Monday, it's, you know, it's almost as if, and this is a little too pat and a little too black and white, but, you know, there's this conversation about the fight to save, you know, the city's soul when it comes to soul versus malls and skyscrapers. So
yeah.
it's a hell of a time to be a restaurateur in New York City.
Yes, it is. So let's jump a little back into your history, though. With how did you after Barbudo? Was then your position with Sever, the kitchen director? Did you leave the restaurant life and then get into that? And then you moved, I mean, being the food editor at Bon Appetit and into being editor-in-chief at these other glossy magazines is, I mean, you. I feel like it was a fast track for all that.
Yeah, I got really lucky a few times.
and like, amazing for you.
Well, I was, you know, I said yes to new experiences and... Yeah, before I was really ready for them, you know, and I think for me that first 3 years in food media, from 08 to 2011 at Sever was a real. Barbudo was my culinary school. Sever was really, you know, that was like my master's in food journalism, because every day, you know, you're coming to work with people like Jim Oslin and Karen Shimizu, who's now our executive editor at Food and Wine. And everybody brought it. Everybody had great ideas. You know, we were competitive but supportive, and you had to bring it. And that really, you know, A, it taught me I really didn't know how to write, not yet at least. B, you know, I used my culinary skills because I ran the test kitchen, and that helped me stay connected to food, and get to know. Other chefs and restaurateurs in the city, and the whole thing was a really formative foundational experience, you know, and that led to going to work at Bon App and Condé Nast, and when Adam Rappaport came over, was another transformational moment, because Adam is such an inspirational leader and you know, builder of brands and you know, believer in the power of storytelling. And I still use stuff that every day that I learned from Adam, you know, call him Coach Riley. And that was two very short years there, you know, in a dream job at Bon App.
Right. Yeah. It's an amazing publication. So how did you get the opportunity then to go into Food and Wine and also it was a big change bringing Food and Wine down to Alabama.
Very big change. So, you know, when my wife and I moved down to Birmingham 6 years ago, we had a 9-month-old baby, my daughter Frances, who's now 7, And we moved down for, you know, change of pace, quality of life. We were in a one bedroom in Brooklyn Heights, and, you know, we needed space and we need money. And never did I think that moving to Alabama would have given us these new big new career opportunities. You know, but we took a risk, and that risk was rewarded three times over. And the, you know, the first job in Birmingham was at Southern Living for a couple of years, and that led to Cooking Light. Did that for 4 years, and during the last days of Time Inc., you know, every editor was pulling double duty and doing two jobs, and we built a 40,000 square foot test kitchen in Birmingham, test kitchen, video and photo studio. And it really, really allowed us to compete and to bring more talent down to Birmingham. And that was a big reason why Birmingham became viable for Food & Wine. And so when I was tapped to run Food & Wine, you know, it was about not just changing the culture, but thinking about how to operate in two cities. You know, because in Birmingham, we've got our art department, our photo team, production, a few editors, the test kitchen. And in New York, we've got wine, restaurant editorial, the whole digital team. And, you know, you really have to figure out how to operate in two cities. And that's one of the reasons why we have this good egg culture. You know, you really have to reinforce that culture every day, because to be creative when you're not in the same room, and to produce stories and think about, you know, where a caption should go, or what photo to use. You know, that's all easier when you're in the same room as with somebody else, you know? So yeah. we have to practice creativity in a different way.
Yeah. Well, you're doing a beautiful job at it, I would have
Thank
to
you.
Say. So let's take a little break here, and we're going to come back, talk more with Hunter. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
This episode is brought to you by Paris Gourmet, a leading specialty food importer and distributor servicing the New York tri-state area and beyond from coast to coast. I'm Jordan Werner Berry, the host of Modernist Breadcrumbs here on HRN. When it comes to freshly baked artisan bread, it's key to pair it with butter that's made with the same amount of care and attention, and you don't have to go all the way to France to find truly amazing butter. Bourmont 83% is an American butter made using traditional French methods. It's produced by a dairy cooperative in New England, and as a Vermont native, I love that this delicious butter is made locally by family farms. Bourmont 83% is great for cooking, baking, and serving on your table with fresh breads and artisan cheeses. It's proudly distributed by Paris Gourmet to restaurants and grocery stores around the tri-state area. Learn more about Paris Gourmet and all of their gourmet savory foods and pastry ingredients at parisgourmet.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Hunter Lewis. He's the editor-in-chief of Food & Wine magazine. So let's talk about Food & Wine magazine. you recently launched a new F&W Pro. So do you want to explain what that is?
So F&W Pro is a new food and drink business content hub. And it's a way for us to speak directly to folks in the food and beverage industry. You know, I'd say 90%+ of our audience is what I call civilians. They're consumers at home who are looking for ideas to entertain, looking for wines to pair and pour, looking for recipes to cook and travel itineraries to go and do. You know, but we also have this relationship with the trade and with the chef and restaurateur and winemaker community that's unlike any other media brand. And a lot of that is because of events like the Food & Wine Classic in Aspen. It's because of Best New Chefs and a relationship with these folks that we have honored and celebrated over the years. And coming from the restaurant world, 12 or so years ago, and seeing what's happening now in restaurant spaces and seeing, you know, the bad behavior spilled across the front pages of the New York Times of certain chefs, you know, and thinking about our very nasty national dialogue, you know, we thought about what can food and wine do to be not just to be a part of the conversation, but to potentially lead change. And the answer is Food and Wine Pro. And Food and Wine Pro is, you know, it's really about celebrating leadership, mentorship. It's about giving pros the tools to grow personally and professionally. And we do this through my newsletter that I write and publish every Friday, through Kat Kinsman and her podcast, Communal Table, that comes out every week. We've got Elena Page on the website and also events. You know, so yesterday we just did, we just announced the 2019 class of Best New Chefs.
It's amazing. And, it's quite a list.
10 amazing chefs from across the country, including Puerto Rico. And they're awesome. You know, they're the chefs that are going to lead and change and pioneer the way that we eat and drink over the next 30 years, much like the chefs over the past 30 years, like Thomas Keller and David Chang and Missy Robbins and other luminaries have shaped the way we eat now. You know, but it's not enough for a food media brand now to publish a list. It doesn't matter how good the reporting is. Of course it matters. The reporting better be good. The scouting better be good. The chefs better be legit. Whether you're writing about coffee or writing about chefs, you better do your homework. But I don't think it's enough anymore to publish a list. You know, for us, it's important that we're investing in the people that we are honoring with this accolade. And so that's why we do things like the Best New Chef Mentorship Program. You know, and so yesterday we got in a room with 28 people, and these chefs' phones were just blowing up all over social media because we had announced that morning that they were Best New Chefs. And, you know, they're getting DMs over Instagram and texts and emails, you know, but they're not armed yet with that arsenal of skills like veteran chefs and restaurateurs are. You know, they haven't been battle tested, and it's a brave new world out there. So the mentorship program is really about aligning past Best New Chefs like Tom Colicchio and George Mendez and Rocco DiSpirito and Missy Robbins with this new guard, and talking about issues of the day, whether it's about building your brand or, you know, knowing who to sign a partnership agreement with, to mental health and work-life balance, to, you know, how to handle PR and media. You know, those are some of the topics we covered yesterday. And the idea is that, you know, hopefully we're creating some new lily pads for these Best New Chefs, the new ones, to navigate, you know, this bigger pond. And, you know, everybody's going to fail. Everybody's going to screw up. Everybody's going to make mistakes. But hopefully we can help this new guard make fewer mistakes than their older colleagues, you know, their older peers. And hopefully we can figure out a way that by investing in them, we're creating a new kind of community and a community that's committed to leading change in this industry. You know, it's easy to point out bad behavior. It's easy to point out bad actors, you know, but there's so many good people in this business. Yeah. And there's so many strong restaurant families and strong restaurant cultures. And so it's important to showcase those and to share best practices. It's important that, you know, we get out of this pirate ship mentality, you know, the super work hard, play hard culture, and think more about how to professionalize the industry.
Yeah, no, it's really smart. I think it's wonderful you're doing that. Is the, for moving forward with it, will there be continual events bringing people together, or did you specifically match a Best New Chef with a previous Best New Chef?
So the mentorship program, it's twofold. There was the 3-hour session yesterday, mm-hmm. Before our party last night, and then we've given the chefs, the new chefs, a survey to talk about what kind of mentor they did like, and then based on their feedback, we'll pair them up with a former Best New Chef. You know, whether it's in their city or somewhere else.
That's really cool. And the list, Jordana Rothman did an incredible job with her traveling around the states.
24 cities, 30,000 miles.
Yeah, and that Puerto Rico's on the list, and also, I mean, a few. It's a very diverse list. I like it. You know, I think she did an incredible job. This is a good segue from your talking about Best New Chefs, to my question from my previous episode, because I had on Danielle Ballou in episode 210, and he is in the first class of Best
That's
New
right.
Chefs from Food & Wine magazine in 1988. So
Danielle, Thomas Keller.
Rick Bayless.
Bayless was in that class.
Yeah, it was. It's that the list is
super heady. I mean, it's a really, really cool thing when you trace the arc of culinary history in America. You know, that really didn't begin to percolate until the late 70s. And you look at where we're at now, and you look at the people who led that, these movements. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were Best New Chefs.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing. So Danielle Ballou, legendary chef and restaurateur with the Dynex Group, he has two questions for you. We're going to play them back.
Well, I think, you know, the Food & Wine keep also evolving, growing into his readership. And what I like is, would they keep extending the publishing side, or do you think for him social media is much more important and communication or the reach out to their consumer? Is it better through either not only social media but media platform such as phone or computers,
right,
or versus print? And that's one question. And also Food & Wine, you know, they have always done Best New Chef, which is great. But would they do, like James Beard, more recognition for other things than chef, such as, you know, Best New Pastry Chef, Best New Bakers, Best New...
Other categories. There you go.
Good questions.
Absolutely. Yes.
So to answer Danielle's first one, you know, what's awesome right now is that Food & Wine print, the magazine, is growing. Revenue's up. Pages are up.
Good
which
to
for
hear.
Me as a greedy editor who wants a lot of pages to tell the stories with big full-page photos, that's a good thing. You know, we've got a unique opportunity at a time when the industry is shrinking and magazines are shrinking, that we're growing. So we're committed to print. Meredith, our corporate owner, is committed to print. So we're all in, you know. But we're also committed to every other platform. You know, we're committed to growing and improving Instagram and Twitter and the new podcast that I mentioned, Kat Kinsman's Communal Table. So, you know, you've got to be on every platform, and you've got to make sure that you're putting out quality stories, and you got to make sure that you're the brand on all platforms and that aesthetically, stylistically, through your voice, that it's Food & Wine on each one. So they're all important. But print is the one that drives the most revenue, and it's the one that has the biggest reach and also drives the most engagement as a reader. So it's still our bread and butter. And then the second question, we've explored opening up Best New Chefs and thinking about what the model is. I don't think we would ever think about taking the James Beard Foundation approach, because, you know, that's an important organization. And those awards work in their own way. So I wouldn't want to compete with that. I would think about how maybe we would partner with them, maybe to celebrate good leadership, things like that. But as we think about our lists and thinking about adding new dimensions to them, we're about to announce our Best New Restaurants. So that's another list on top of Best New Chefs. For the first time, the day we launched Food & Wine Pro, we launched a new kind of list, and that's called Great Restaurants to Work For. Nice. And that's all about restaurant culture and great leadership, best business practices. So that's a different kind of list, you know. And I think that those are the kind of things that we're interested in growing in a big way, you know, because really that's about acknowledging good, you know, as you kicked off the show with.
Yeah, great answers. And you have the Aspen Classic coming up soon, too, that you guys are still pioneering or part of.
That's right.
Any highlights coming up with that? Like any do you bring the best new chefs out there?
Best new chefs will be cooking at the Food & Wine Classic in Aspen, June 14th or 16th. And I attended my first Food & Wine Classic last summer, and there's nothing else like it. I mean, it is such an incredible experience, and you're there in the mountains in Colorado, and the 5,000 ticket holders are rubbing elbows with the chefs. And the chefs are all there because it's a reunion. And they're all sharing stories about their families. They're doing business deals. They're, you know, having a great time. And it's a really, really cool experience. And, you know, this year we're going to have some of the same characters like Marcus and Jonathan Marcus Samuelson, mm-hmm. Jonathan Waxman,
right.
Jacques Pepin. And then we'll have some new faces. J.J. Johnson will be there. Carla Hall will be there. You know, and so we're excited to welcome some of the new talented chefs there. And then also Ruth Reichel, you know, who I've always looked up to. Ruth's going to be there, and we're going to do a Q&A about her awesome new book, her memoir from the gourmet years. Martha Stewart will be there.
Fabulous.
Trying to get Martha to bring Snoop. But I think it'll just be Martha.
That would be very cool.
Martha's awesome. So
yeah, I've been, I think, six times the classic. I'm due to go back. It's just there's something about Aspen and the mountain air, and it's just a happy place.
It's magical,
and it's such a well executed event. It's like seamless. So
you know, you come away almost like you know that high you would get at summer camp. You know, why can't the world be more like this? Or how do I take that week of summer camp into life? You know, it's like you want to bottle some of that magic from Aspen and carry it with you for the rest of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to take another break. We're going to come back. We'll play my speed round game and talk some industry news. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio has plenty more. Hi, I'm Harry Rosenblum, and I'm the host of Feast Your Ears here on HRN. My show explores the world of food through storytelling. Every week, I talk with people inside and outside the food world about how experience has shaped what they eat and cook. You can find Feast Your Ears wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Hunter Lewis. It's time for my speed round game. So what this is I'm going to name a few things, and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Okay.
You ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat in.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
All of the above.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Lots of small plates.
Lots of small plates. Like it. Communal table or chef's counter?
Communal table.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Cooking a recipe or editing a recipe?
Well, I think the best way to edit a recipe is to cook a recipe. So
that's just fabulous. Okay, three more. Red Boat fish sauce or any other sauce?
Red Boat fish sauce all the way.
I don't know if I've ever had that. I might have to go buy some.
Oh, it's the jam. There's nothing else as good and as versatile as Red Boat.
Yeah, I saw it on a list of your favorite things, so figured.
Not sponsored, yeah. But I do love it.
Yet. No. How about a cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Manhattan, Brooklyn, or Montgomery?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Very cool. I've never been down south. I need to visit. I mean, I've been down south, but not to Montgomery.
Hey, come eat some barbecue with white sauce.
White sauce.
White sauce, yeah. It's it's a North Alabama thing, and you mop smoked chickens as you're cooking them over hardwood coals with a vinegar and mayonnaise and black pepper sauce, and it's dynamite. Really, really tangy.
Wow, sounds great. Yeah, I'm down for it.
I wasn't a believer until I had it. It's legit.
Okay, I believe you. I feel like you know your stuff. So I had on industry news, I had your list. I feel like we should talk about it a little more because yesterday it's big news. Food and Wine's Best New Chefs for 2019 came out, and this is curated by restaurant editor at large Jordana Rothman. She picks 10 rising stars across the country. And, you know, I've been to two of the places on the list. You have Automix with Jungyeon Park, that's in New York City, and Kwame, I don't know how to pronounce this last name, Onwuachi.
Onwuachi
at Keith and Ken in Washington, D.C. And they're both fabulous, and I know them both. And I was just very happy that they were
Kwame awarded. And JP are stars. They are legit stars. And I think both of their futures are extremely bright. You know, and I've gotten to know Kwame a little bit over the past few days, and have read his new book, which is incredible.
I have a copy.
Yeah,
it's a good one. I need to dive in.
You know, and it was interesting. He said it at a panel not long ago. It was in Philadelphia.
Right.
He was saying, you know, he gets criticism. Oh, you're 29. How could you possibly publish a memoir at 29? You know, and his answer is, why not? Like, why does age matter? You know, his experiences are so different and diverse. And the book is a great read. And, you know, I think he's going to be a real leader that's going to step up. And I'm excited to see what he does. You know, and JP, I was getting a little bit jaded last year. I come up to New York from Alabama about every 3 weeks, you know, and try to eat as many restaurants as possible. And I was just getting kind of jaded on the restaurant scene, which is more my fault. That's me. I was just, you know, kind of falling in old ruts. And I had a few bites at the bar at Attaboy that really woke me up. And it was that sort of the sort of like lightning bolts of like, the magic's still here. And then I had a tasting menu at Atomex in January that was incredible. And, you know, that level of service and that attention to detail and that education that you're getting in a really, really hospitable, joyful, sensual way about what Korean fine dining can be. It was an incredible experience. It's one of the best meals I've had in a long time.
Yeah, I dined there in the fall. I think it was very close to when they had opened. Maybe they were open like 6 weeks or less. And I thought it was one of the most thoughtful, amazing meals I've had. I mean, the details, the cards with every dish, the care. And I knew, I left that experience knowing it was going to do well and be rewarded for what they were doing. Like, you know, that was my feeling.
I think that what JP and his wife are doing, it's so singular, you know, and their vision is so so complete, and their aesthetic sense is also so powerful. There's nothing else like that.
It's definitely special. And I have to, you know, always Jordana, you know, she puts in a lot of miles traveling around, and there's, you know, from Seattle to Oakland to Puerto Rico. I mean, there's you know, lots of. She covered the, you know, it's very diverse. I love it. There's places in, you know, across the country.
Well, yeah, there's great restaurants everywhere now.
And, yeah, true.
You know, this is never an easy list to put together. And those miles, those 30,000 miles are real. That's a lot of a lot of time away from home. You know, but it's amazing to think about how our culinary capitals are shifting. And right now, the big conversation is about, you know, is LA the real sun in the culinary solar system for the country right now? And, you know, I think for a lot of reasons, the answer is yes. You know, but if you think what's happening in Seattle, what's happening in San Francisco, what's happening in Dallas now, and Puerto Rico, and Birmingham, there's such great food everywhere and such great hospitality everywhere. And that's not going away. You know, it's only growing. And I think this list shows, you know, it's a part of the past couple years. You know, we're seeing a real change in kitchens and a real change in who is leading the way. And this explosion of new kinds of flavors and new ingredients.
Yeah. Well, it's congratulations to everyone on this list. I think it's really an honor to be on those top, that 10, just, you know, so I'm very happy for them all. And yeah, people should go to your website, what,
foodandwine.com.
Foodandwine.com.
It's right there on the homepage, and it's all over Instagram.
Yeah, yeah, go to Instagram. You'll follow along. I've been following along. Okay, so before we take one more break, I'm just a little announcement. So next Wednesday, April 17th, it's New York City's Taste of the Nation for No Kid Hungry. It's taking place at the Brooklyn Expo Center, which is in Greenpoint. And this is a wonderful event. I've been many times. I'm going to go this year. It's a walk-around tasting event, and it brings in 40 of New York City's hottest chefs, bartenders, and sommeliers, and 100% of the proceeds support the No Kid Hungry campaign's work to end childhood hunger in America. So I have a special discount or promo code for my listeners, 20% off tickets. You can go to events.nokidhungry.org/New York, or just go to the nokidhungry.org website and you can follow along if and you will find the New York event, and my promo code is INDUSTRY20. If you put that in, you'll get 20% off your tickets. Also, I'm partnering with this taste event, and I have a special giveaway for a pair of tickets. So how we're going to do this, go to Instagram, follow at All Industry, follow at No Kid Hungry, and then post about us, tag us at All Industry, at No Kid Hungry, on your Instagram feed or your story, and tell me why you want these tickets. And the first person to do this, I will give away this pair of tickets. I will contact you directly by direct message. So just to be clear, though, I don't have any budget for lodging or transportation. So you will have to be in New York or Brooklyn to go to the event. But I hope you guys play along and to see you there. So that's that. We're going to take one more break. I have my solo dining experience coming up and the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. So this week, it's at Charleston. Here's the rundown. The location, 1000 Lancaster Street in Harbor East, Baltimore, Maryland. The concept, a celebrated pick for new American plates and a well-curated wine list. The contemporary cuisine is rooted in French fundamentals and the low country cooking of South Carolina. The owners, wine director Tony Foreman and chef Cindy Wolf. So why did I go? Because I was visiting Baltimore because I just started working with Spike Jardy of Woodbury Kitchen. And I planned a little extra time so I could explore Baltimore. And I was curious about this restaurant. It's highly acclaimed. It was founded in 1997 and it's located over in the waterfront neighborhood of Baltimore. So I went. My experience. Now, I made a reservation for two because online that was the only option, and I find that a lot with solo dining. A lot of times there just isn't a solo reservation available, but I called to change it, and they happily did so. And actually, the response on the phone, the gentleman said, well, you'll have good company, which I thought was funny or made me smile. Okay, so when I arrived, they asked me if I wanted a table by the kitchen. I said, of course, that would be fabulous. And I was seated at a two-top near the open kitchen. I could see Chef Cindy expediting the whole night. And my server went through the menu for me. So their menu changes daily. They have different course options. They have that you can choose between 3, 4, 5, or 6 courses from about 25 dishes. And dessert is not included in that. You also get dessert, and they have an option for a cheese cart. So what did I get? I went with 4 courses, and I had the signature rich lobster soup with curry, cornmeal fried oysters, Louisiana crawfish Napoleon, and spring morels. And then for dessert, I had Midnight at the Opera, which was a chocolate dessert. My take, it was amazing. I especially loved the flavorful soup, and the crawfish was beautifully presented, and it was just divine. My meal was definitely ideal for a seafood lover. They do have vegetable dishes and meat options, but I realized I went mostly seafood. So the ambiance, it's an elegant yet comfortable white tablecloth setting. It's very, there's a lot of space between the different tables, and it was a quieter setting than a lot of the, I'd say, New York City restaurants I've been to lately. Perfect for a solo dinner or a date. Interesting tidbit. Okay, so this year, Chef Cindy Wolf is nominated for the 8th time for Best Chef Mid-Atlantic at the James Beard Awards. Let's see if she gets the win this year. I chatted with her a little bit, and we'll be going to Chicago to cover the awards, so I hope to see her there. Personal fun fact. So this is cool. I met Peter Keck, who's the maitre d' and manager there, when I was leaving, and we got to talking, and I said, well, maybe I'll try to go to the Orioles-Yankees game in Baltimore when I'm in town on Sunday. And he's like, we're going, we have a box, let me know if you're there. Long story short, I ended up in their box at the stadium on Sunday for a baseball game, and it was really cool. And I forgot to ask Peter, I think he was the gentleman on the phone that I spoke with when I changed my reservation, but it was really quite a treat, so thank you so much. The cost of my meal was $94. That's not including tax or gratuity. Would I go back? Yes, I would. And their website is charlestonrestaurant.com. And that's my take on that. And have you been there?
I have not, but the hospitality sounds incredible.
Incredible. I ended up in a box seat at a baseball game because, I don't know, sometimes things happen when you're solo, and I'm more open to talking to people, I guess.
No, I hear you. I love the way that they talk to you on the phone. You know, that first encounter with the restaurant made a good impression.
It was super sweet, and no one's ever said that to me before. I mean, people have been nice when I've changed reservations, but it was clever. So I recommend this restaurant. I think it was special. It's worth visiting. Okay, it's time for the final question. So my next guest is August Cardona. He's the co-founder of Epicurean Group, which includes Lartusi and Foro and Del Anima, which recently located to Gotham West Market after 11 years on 8th Avenue. So Hunter, what would you like to ask August?
What I would ask August is, especially in a city like New York, what are the things that an Italian restaurant needs to do to stand out among the competition? There's so many great Italian restaurants. What are the keys to making sure that the restaurants and his group stand out, you know, and are the kinds of places that people come back to over and over and over again? You know, is it a particular brand of hospitality? Is it a particular brand of culture? Is it a style of pasta that nobody else makes? Or is it all those things? You know, but I think especially if you're in an Italian restaurant in this incredible dining city, you know, how do you stand out?
I will find out. Great question. Thank you so much. That is the show.
Thanks for having me, Sherry.
I'm honored to have you here. I'm so impressed with your career and everything you've done. I've always been a subscriber of Food & Wine. I will continue to be. And I look forward to all the exciting things you're doing ahead.
Very grateful to be here.
Thank you. My guest today has been Hunter Lewis. He's the editor-in-chief of Food & Wine magazine. Their website's foodandwine.com. You can follow him on social media at Notes From A Cook. You can follow me at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR, and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. All of our shows are archived at heritageradionetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks to my engineer today, Amanda, and thanks again to Hunter. So next week actually is not my show with August. Next week I'm doing an on-the-road episode from the Philly Chefs Conference, and that is a conference I attended in early March, and I will be chatting with Mike Traud, who's the conference founder and event chair. I also have interviews with two of Copenhagen's most respected chefs, Matt Orlando of Amas and Christian Baumann of 108. So tune in next week for that. Then at Heritage, we have a little spring break. I'll be attending the James Beard Awards in Chicago, and then I come back on May 8th, and that's when my show with August Cardona will be live here on Heritage Radio. So I hope you'll tune into all that. I'm Sherry Bayer. Thanks for being part of All in the Industry. Bye. But the seeds you sow.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter, @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.